It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock in Studio 435, the band White Mystery. How great is that? To have White Mystery in studio rocking Studio 435, the brother-sister ferocious rock and roll duo. It's played everything from Riot Fest to toured the world. The Chicago's very own White Mystery will be in studio at 10 o'clock. Play some music live for the Michigan Avenue folk and you at home. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. Right now, though, it's 9 o'clock, and it means it's time for Lee Bay, our architecture contributor here to the download. Lee and I have had numerous conversations about the Lucas Museum, about the Obama Library, about all the things that are either built or now not being built here in Chicago. Lee Bay, good to see you.
Good to see you, man. Good to see you.
Good to see you. So, you know, let's refresh listeners on this, because we've had we've probably talked at length about the preparing for the Lucas Museum. Mm-hmm. You were part of the committee that searched for the site.
Exactly.
So talk quickly about that process, so get us up to speed.
Well, very quickly, in 2014, the mayor convened a committee of 14 people, you know, civic people, urban planning professionals, whatever, to find a site for this museum. The meeting kicked off in the maybe late winter, early spring of 14. With a meeting with George Lucas himself, who came with his lovely wife Melody and sort of laid out the parameters of the museum. It was great at the Shedd Aquarium, as I recall, and you know, and he answered questions about what the museum was and really laid it out with this Museum of Narrative Art was going to be, which is essentially a museum dedicated to how we tell pictures through story, through images, and how we tell stories through images
pictures,
and movies.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, we went through a six-week process in which we found the site. We had two public meetings, as I recall. We took suggestions from the internet, and I got jumped for suggestions. You know, people saying it should go. Can it go to Uptown Theater? Can it go on the old Southwark site?
We had talked about a lot of it being space. This was not going to be a small project.
Exactly. You know, a museum at the time that was going to be on the order square footage wise of the Field Museum. So this is a really big. This is 300,000 to 400,000 square feet. This is a really big building. We made our recommendations, and you know, these things are all online. And so if you look up the Lucas Museum Task Force, you can see still the recommendations that we made. Museum campus site, the Soldier Field parking lot site, turned to be a strong one, we felt at the time, because there was a parking lot already there.
Right.
So there was a structure already on it, underperforming structure, and that it was convenient to everyone. You know, can you put it on the south side? Can you put it on the west side? Can you put it on the north side? We looked at all of that. But all trains run downtown. And so that's what we figured. Well, this would be a good place to kind of
Okay, so let's flash. Mm-hmm. Fast forward here to 2016.
Yes.
What was your reaction on Friday?
Not surprised. Not surprised. I mean, this thing had been going on a lot. You know, as you know, Friends of the Park filed the suit based on whether or not the city had the grounds to give away the land on its own, lease the land on its own to George Lucas. The city kind of put the cart before the horse. It made the memorandum, the agreement with Lucas, and then went to the General Assembly after Friends of the Park filed the suit to get permission to do it.
Is that the same move they did? Was that at the same time they did that move and that also paved the way for the Obama Library? Is that the same? Is that something different?
You know, right around the same time, they did not sue for the Obama Library,
right.
but they stressed their objection to it being built on park land at the time, even now, either at Jackson Park or Washington Park.
Yeah.
What happened is that it's a federal suit, and the judge, John Dara, you know, said the suit had merit. And wouldn't dismiss it, and that kind of gets us where we are now. So it makes the clock get long, and then Lucas, you know, would not look at another site. You know, really wasn't interested in another site. I don't think City Hall was terribly interested for a while to move him to another site until the last minute, sort of,
right.
When this McCormick Place.
Well, I mean, you and I have talked about this. We've talked about the issues that are around this, about mm-hmm. the idea of using parkland or using public space, or this doctrine that sometimes is being used and sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, from your vantage point, where did it go wrong? Because it seems like, you know, they're even with the suit in play. You know, whether before a judge could even make a determination, I mean, there wasn't really a ruling yet that mm-hmm. went one way or the other. The city just kind of walked away. George Lucas walked away.
Mm-hmm.
What could have been done differently, or what do you think of the way that the sort of process kind of played out?
You know, it's a couple of things. Not being a lawyer, I'm in treacherous ground. Very treacherous ground.
This is legal talk with Lee Bay.
That's right. That's right. But the one thing, though, is that the idea that it feels like Lucas will own the building and through the long length of the lease, which is a century, essentially owned the land. That's where a lot of the public discourse is about, as well as the, the roots of the suit. Had he said, look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to build this two ways. I'm going to build this thing, but I'm going to deed it to the park district. Mm-hmm. And I'm done. That may have been less controversial. Certainly may have gave the city a better standing to defend it. Or if he had just said, look, park district, you build this thing. I'll give you the money, for it, and I'm endowing it, and you guys take care of it. It would have called for a public process. It would have called for perhaps an architectural competition, which we do pretty well in this city for public buildings. And it would have given the sense of openness that I think was happening.
The other thing that you and I talked about was about the communication, or the idea that, people for a long time had no concept of what this was. They thought it was a Star Wars museum. They thought it was they didn't know what it was.
Exactly.
But I mean, at the beginning of this process, George Lucas came and talked to the task force that you were on and told you exactly what it was going to be. And that was enlightening to you as a task force member and as a Chicagoan too, to say this is something more than just a Star Wars museum.
Exactly. But the problem is, the issue is, in hindsight, is that he should have taken that speech to every corner of the city to explain what this museum was. It was left to it was left to the mayor. For one point, it's even left to me as a task force member. I mean, but he should have been the person going to schools, going to community groups, and explaining what this museum is. Would it have staved off the suit? Probably not. But at least people would have a good sense of whether this is a thing that the city really, really wants. And in absence of that, people just said it's a Star Wars museum. I mean, people were saying things like, "Oh, it's going to be the stuff out of his attic. It's going to be this." I was like, "No, it's a real museum." But that never resonated with people.
I'm thinking about you in this process. Obviously, your role in this, you've been a big role, but you've also been outspoken about parkland, about keeping things open and clear and free. We've had a lot of conversations about this. But, looking back at this, I think it's interesting. You've had your own run-ins with Friends of the Park. They were kind of on your tail when you guys were doing Soldier Field, right?
That's right.
So you have this relationship already with Friends of the Park. Do you feel like they are accurately being portrayed in the media or by Chicagoans, almost the way that they're sort of being vilified as the enemies of enemies of the park as well as the Friends of the Park? What's your take on it? Because you, as an architecture contributor, as a preservationist, you know their role, but they've also been on the other side of the issues of some of the things that you've worked on.
Exactly. This answer has a nuance to it that hopefully I can get across. The city needs defenders of open space. As we've talked, land in this city is either neglected or contested. You need someone who can stand the gap and fix that, right? The thing about this that bothered me was that this act does not result in any preservation of parkland or the creation of new parkland. The sense is that, the parking lot is still going to be there, but you can always get rid of the parking lot. No, you can't. That thing was a parking lot before Soldier Field got rebuilt 12 years ago now, and it'll be a parking lot 20 years going on. With the Lucas Museum, you have the chance to, build a museum there. And again, not pristine land. There's a 580,000 square foot convention center just to the south, a 62,000 seat stadium just to the north, and a bunch of museums just to the north of that. So we're not talking about pristine. And it isn't really on a lakefront. I mean, there's a harbor in front of it and Northerly Island. So you can't even see the lake from that point. So the part that bothers me is that we could have had at least a museum that added at least 4 acres of parkland to the mix.
Because the surrounding, the architecture, the designs of it were to construct the park around it.
Exactly.
Right.
And I believe, and I, said this on Facebook for whatever that's worth. Is that I believe that that with them at the table, they could have pushed the design of the building, which was roundly panned, to be better. By pushing that, there needs to be better transit connections to the park space. The park space and building needs to get together more. They could have helped push this to a better design. Others could have helped too. The mayor could have played a bigger role.
Well, we'll get to that. Let's take a quick break. Lee Bay in studio with me, architecture contributor. He's worked for everyone from Sun Times to Public Radio to
Mayor Daley.
You're in Mayor Daley's office. So much experience beyond planning and architecture here in the city. We'll continue our conversation with Lee after the break. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, my main man, Lee Bay. Lee, architecture contributor here in Chicago. He's worked in so many different facets from the media, but he's also been in the mayor's office. He understands planning and architecture better than anybody else in the city.
Thank you.
And you're part of the task force that picked the parking lot, so we can blame it on
blame
you.
Blame me, man. Yeah.
Someone needs to be
blamed. I'll take 1/14th of the blame. There were 13 others.
Well, one person that I feel needs to take on more of the blame, and I know this isn't really a political discussion, is the mayor. Mayor Emanuel, it's on his watch. It seems a little bit of hubris in this concept of, I'm just going to make it happen. I'll give you whatever you want. Don't worry about these other things. And it kind of caught up to him. What role does the mayor play when it comes to a museum being able to be built or not built on the lakefront?
You know, this is a good question, because we're talking about a mayor who really, put his stake in this thing and has a track record for getting stuff done when he does that. I mean, the 606 mm-hmm. Bloomingdale Trail on the north
just
side,
up there this
he
weekend,
made that
yeah.
a campaign promise. And you never see a mayor do that, particularly one who's coming into his first term, to say, I'm going to get this thing built, and he'll put his leverage behind it, and he got it built. So he also similarly invested in the Lucas, was smart enough to be able to say, when San Francisco dropped the ball, to say, look, we'll take it. Really, really, really smart. The problem with that is that the buck stops with you. So once you get the thing, what do you do with it? And I think that in some respects, if I may, a couple of mistakes were probably made. One is the one I mentioned earlier, that he should have vetted the site to see how bulletproof it was before becoming public with it, knowing that parkland and lakefront yeah. land is contentious.
Contentious. There's even precedent with Soldier Field, the renovation. They don't
Soldier
want there.
With Soldier Field, with the Children's yeah. Museum, right. going to Grant Park. I mean, so, oh, yeah. People will put up a scuff over that. That is the,
it's almost like a Chicago mistake. Rite of passage in a way.
Exactly. So, right. What didn't they see in that? Secondly is that I think that he should have been more flexible, and George Lucas should have been more flexible, in seeing another site. That at the end of the day, what's the win for Chicago? If a guy's going to come from New York or China, we talked about this, or whatever, the fact that it said 12th in the lake or 13th in the lake or 23rd in the lake at McCormick, at Michael
yeah,
Reese,
yeah, right.
He's already here in Chicago. He's
doesn't matter.
That extra
right.
It's
a difference. There's a difference between like putting it Southworks or putting it Waukegan or whatever.
Exactly.
That's an hour and a half. That's an hour. That's a ways away. But we're only talking about
less than a mile, right, between right. the two, or about a mile between the two. So I think that when this thing, so again, A, should have made sure the site was bulletproof before he did anything. When he found out that it wasn't bulletproof, he should have been more flexible, and Lucas should have been more flexible about looking for another site. Now, again, I think as a task force member, we picked the right site. But again, what do you want to walk away with at the end of the day? No museum, which is what we got now, or at least a museum someplace else.
I'm sorry, but mm-hmm. I mean, you were part of that Soldier Field. You were, when you worked for Mayor Daley, the Soldier Field renovation was mm-hmm. a big part of what you, hey, welcome to the job. Here's what you're going to
do. Exactly.
Turn this into,
yeah,
but, yeah. But in that, there were lawsuits and there were fights and the Friends of the Park were involved. So for you, I mean, even being a task force member, you had to know that was on the horizon because you're only a couple hundred feet south of where that fight was.
Exactly, exactly. And the difference being with Soldier Field, there was a building already there, but Soldier Field was a publicly owned building. The Chicago Park District owns that building. The Bears are a tenant. That's the kind of approach that could have been at least investigated.
And there's precedent.
With the Lucas thing, that the Park District builds mm-hmm. the building. It's our building. It's a public building. Lucas, you program it. You do whatever. Park District doesn't tell the Bears who to play, how to play,
but
what
does
to
this,
do.
But does this just go back to the, and this is all speculate. I don't know. But it's like, yeah. it feels to me like there wasn't a spirit of compromise in the city and with George Lucas, where it was almost like, this is what I want. Make it happen. And that sort of is if what you're talking about, this compromise or changing the way that it was initially thought to be, could have saved it as opposed to ram it down the throats and let's get it done.
And this is where politics is an art and not a science. You do want to defend the site that you think is the great site, right? But then there's got to be something there. You got to have a little, you got to have a little give, right? But I think that all the blame does not rest with Rahm. I think a pox on everybody's house. I think Lucas was wrong by not, again, explaining what this museum was, not getting out there and defending it and being inflexible on another site. And I think Friends of the Parks, while in the spirit of the law was right, the letter of the law was right in what they're doing. The spirit of the law, I think it fails. Because, again, we're going to be stuck with no new grass, right. No new parkland. And we actually threw away parkland, which would have come as a partner to this museum.
Now, you know, one thing that I can't – it has – we talk about politics. The relationship between advocacy groups like Friends of the Park and the city of Chicago and the mayor – they seem to be somewhat contentious.
They should be.
How much of it is they just don't trust the mayor? They don't trust the city. They're not going to be looking for compromises on the site because at the end of the day, they've had a history where the city's been like, look over here, bam, got you with the other hand. You know, So, I mean, to their credit, they hung tough even in the face of the city trying to put this strange, I've never seen it, Lee, strange marketing campaign to discredit Friends of the Park.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really weird the way that, and I know that they'll say, no, those were people, but there was forces behind the sort of, you know, protesting Friends of the Park headquarters and things like that, which is a weird thing for me to see.
You know, it really is. And, you know, they didn't publicly protest the merits of the suit. They didn't tell the public, this suit is funky, and here's the reason why. They discredited the people who filed the suit, which to me, frankly, did leave a bad taste in my mouth. This is why I think, you know, there's no innocent party in this whole thing. I know there's a sense of saying, okay, well, who's the bad guy in all of this? Who's the bad actor in all of this? There's a desire as Americans for us to see that.
Yeah.
But they're all bad actors. And they're all good actors at the same time. This is the complexity about this thing that I find both fascinating and frustrating.
That's a great way to put it. Fascinating and frustrating. Because even as a Chicagoan, there is a sense of pride that something didn't get shoved down somebody's throat without looking. And it's also a sense of frustration in the way that the city, this could have been good for the city, and it was blocked because of sort of an old philosophy.
Yeah, old way, an old way of doing things. And, you know, this sort of and the thing also frustrated me was the end game when, you know, the idea was, we are going to not spend a public dime on this thing. So Lucas, here's your site. You built the thing on your own dime. Which was great, $743 million. We get essentially not a free museum, but we get a museum that we don't have to pay for the cost of, right? And then to save the thing, when the suit goes on, the mayor is willing to, you know, figure out this other plan in which he would demolish old McCormick Place,
and
build a museum
on the
foundations, build another convention center, decking Lakeshore Drive to replace the space lost to McCormick Place. And find extend $1.3 billion in new taxes.
And have to deal with the state.
And you know, it's like, what is that? It's a Hail Mary. You know, it's worse than a Hail Mary. But on the other hand, you know, if there were $1.3 million on the table, McCormick Place. I mean, Michael Reese would have been a great site. That money could have paid off the debt.
That's a great point.
You know,
if there was money available,
exactly.
If the city was willing to invest in a McCormick Place site, why not take that money and invest somewhere else?
Exactly.
And I think that's what a lot of Chicagoans wonder.
For half that amount, I mean, just make up a number, $700 million, paid off the note that the city owns in McCormick Place, which I think is around $100 million, and then $600 million in public funds for infrastructure improvements, and Lucas can build his museum on top of that. Had we known, had that been part of the thing, which gets to a thing, which is why I never work in the city again, we need urban planning in this city. And urban planners and urban planning, all those questions are asked. What's the best place to put it from an urban planning perspective? We did a good job, I think.
Let's take a break for the news.
Sure.
But I'm interested because maybe there is a need for, I guess, what we would consider to be, I don't want to be so grandiose, but a new Burnham plan that just gives Chicago an understanding of what the next century is going to look like.
We do.
The Bay Plan?
The Bay Plan. No. This city will be on fire.
Can I get initial in there? The Bay K? Can we get it together? All right. Lee Bay, architecture contributor here on The Download with me tonight. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. And we got to talk Ebony Jet, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We didn't get a chance to talk about that news that came out. I wanted to talk about not just the media side of it, but there's an architecture part of that story as well. We'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. It's a Download here on WGN 720. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Lee Bay, regular here, architecture contributor. He's worked in several different places, including his blog, Beyond the Boat Tour, one of my favorite blogs of all time.
Back in the old days.
Also worked for, was a columnist at the Sun-Times, and he worked in, was it the planning department?
Mayor's office.
Mayor's office. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mayor
That's
Daley.
Right. That's right. Worked for the mayor directly.
Before we move on to some other stories in architecture, the one thought I had, because there was a big piece that the Tribune did about this project, the Lucas Museum, now is added to a list of projects that never came about.
Oh, yeah.
Spire is one. Mm-hmm. You know, the hole that's still there and people trying to figure out. I think they talked about, I want to say it was a harbor project. I can't remember what it was, but there was some, there was like three or four projects in Chicago history that...
Oh, look. There are something like 200 projects in Chicago history that, and I know this because I was going to write a book about this once, that got through approval processes. I'm not talking about pie in the sky. I'm going to build a copy of the Eiffel Tower on 61st and Eberhard. I mean, like, things that got through the planning process that somehow fell apart. But it's a funny – so Millennium Park is probably a good example. So Millennium Park, what's now open in 2004 as Millennium Park, was – even in the days of Daniel Burnham and just after, was supposed to be an open space for people to be it. In the 60s and 70s, it was going to be called Lakefront Gardens. I can show you renderings of it with a band show, all the elements we see today. So a good idea, the good news about this, if there's any good news, is that a good idea ultimately finds currency. As you know, converting Meigs Field, how it was done, still a controversy.
But politics is an art. Exactly. That's what you said, right?
Converting Meigs Field to open space. Talked about for 30 years. Finally happened in the middle of the night with X's on the runway. So the good ideas almost always find currency.
Where do we see the Lucas Museum in the history of failed projects? Will it be remembered? Will Chicagoans go, oh, the history, the Lucas Museum boondoggle?
We'll forget about it. We always do. For instance, we were in the running to get the United Nations here. It was going to go on Northerly Island back in the 40s, and we were in the mix. I can show you documents of it. New York got it. And we're like, okay, cool. That's the one thing about this city. As much as I criticize it, I love it, and you know, I was born here, is that there's no city in America that can shake off a loss and dunk on you like Chicago can. So that's the one.
That's great.
We'll survive this. A lot of people are saying, and I've said it was a loss, but it's not a fatal loss. We'll get beyond this. We'll get beyond this in 3 weeks. A month, whatever. But that's the one thing we do well.
When Gene Roddenberry's museum comes to town,
the Battlestar Galactica Museum. That's what I'm looking for, man. With Richard Hatch and Dirk Benedict.
Lee, we didn't get a chance to talk about Ebony Jet. I mean, this is not a media segment, but Ebony Jet announced that they're selling to an Austin, Texas-based company. Ebony Jet, long-time media company, Chicago-owned, the Johnson Company. I mean, everywhere down the line, I mean, African-American publication that's historic, decades old. But the other story, which I think is interesting, is coincidentally the building, which has architectural significance here in Chicago, is also on the block. But that building's no longer owned by Ebony Jet.
Exactly. Columbia College bought it, our alma mater, bought it, I guess, around 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. And with the idea that it would preserve it, this is 820 South Michigan, turn into turn into a media center that was named, not like a library, in a media center named in honor of John and Eunice Johnson. They preserved some of the original stuff, which is really wild. The original interior still from the 70s, still maintained. They got a new president in Warwick Carter, the old president, left. New president, has financial problems to deal with, and this became less of a priority. So now they're putting on the block. They bought it for $8 million. They'll get that easily or more. The concern for those who like preservation or the preservation of Black history and architectural preservation is that it's an 11-story building, so it's undersized for its site. So just to give you an example, down the street, one block south on the down the street, Helmut Jahn was proposing an 800-foot skyscraper, 800 and some change foot skyscraper, 70 stories, I think, or more. This one has 11. So the so you can build very large. So the question is, now they're putting it for sale, what's going to happen to it? Will the city's landmark mechanism jump in? Because if any building in Chicago, pioneering Black architect, building a building for a pioneering Black publisher, cultural maker, and American, if any building is worth landmark status, that's the one.
Does the city landmarking apparatus, as you just mentioned, does it have teeth? Does it have muscle, kind of like Friends of the Park did in this situation? Could it come in and say, no way, man, you can't do anything with
this? It can grant preliminary landmark status at its next meeting if it does the research and chooses to.
Do you think it's worth it? Do you think that building's worth it?
I think it is. I think not only that, I think it's worthy of the trifecta. Chicago Landmark, National Historic Landmark, and the National Register of Historic Places. Is that important? And, once that happens, city landmark status, you can't get a demolition permit pulled on it, and you have to maintain the building to agreed-upon standards. So
I would imagine Columbia College would fight that because they want to sell it. That'd be an interesting.
It would be. It really would be. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. They'd be on the wrong side of they're an art school.
Well, they sure would.
Alumni
check won't cash. I'll tell you that.
You're going to go down a rung to like $25 instead of 75 that you usually give them?
Zero, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm interested, the one thing about Ebony Jet, which is they have a tremendous archive, and they've been trying to sell the archive. That was a story last year that they put the archive on the market. You could buy pictures, and people were upset about that because you're losing this huge collection. That didn't sell like they wanted it to. But for you as a photographer, as someone who obviously a history buff and into architecture, the idea of selling an archive, how do you feel about that?
It depends on who it's sold to. I wish that a university could buy it and open it up and make it. There's this archive that Indiana University has of a guy named George Cushman. He was here for a while. He took thousands of photos of Chicago and other places, and he did it on Kodachrome film back in the 30s. So you get a chance to see Chicago the way it used to look in color. We usually see these pictures in black and white. They've made these, you can search them, you can look at them, you can do everything but own them, and you probably could buy them. But they're open to the public. You can see them all. They're not turning up in Gap commercials or anything like that. So the idea is that it's a gift to the public. This is the kind of approach I wish a university in Chicago would do. Mm-hmm. I wish Chicago State University, pioneering, black university in Chicago, public university, I wish they could do it. I wish University of Chicago could possibly do it.
Yeah, right.
That would be the thing. So, the selling of the archive isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's who ends up with it. The picture of Coretta Scott Davis, Coretta Scott King. At Martin Luther King's funeral with her daughter in her lap, Juanita Sleets, Pulitzer Prize winning picture. Does that, who gets that? Who gets to use that? Does it turn up one place where you don't want it, selling blue jeans or whatever? Or does it, or is it in the public realm the way it needs to be and respected the way the image needs
to be? It's interesting. It's preserving history. It's preserving legacy. But also, this is art. The photograph you mentioned just now, that's unbelievable, iconic American art.
It is. So in Liebe's perfect world, perhaps, millionaire steps in, buys it, and gifts it to the DeSable Museum, to the Art Institute, to someone who can treat this valuable collection the right way.
I saw on Facebook today you took an awesome picture of Lake Point Tower.
Thank you.
And you mentioned, you said it still holds up.
It still holds up.
And we're talking about the building that's right in front of Navy Pier, I guess it is, where the elite live in Chicago. But what is it about that building that still holds up?
We think of Measian architecture in Chicago, like square boxes, IBM building, Illinois Center, these kind of things. Here, two Mies students, George Shipwright, the late George Shipwright, who died a couple years ago, and his partner John Heinrich, took the Measian box and they gave it sexy curves. They based it on one of Mies' old unbuilt designs from the 20s, from before he got here. But the building is it's sexy. It's tall. It's sensuous. It's curved, and it sits there aloof on the lake by itself.
Yeah, it's so weird that it is by itself.
It is. Now the reason why that is, why we can't build east of Lakeshore Drive, which is the topic of the first part of this.
Right. That was going to bring
this
it full
was private
circle.
Land owned by the old Chicago Dock and Canal Company that happened to be east of Lakeshore Drive. They had property west, but they had this jut that stuck out in the lake, and even then it was controversial for the day, but that's how they were able to do it. It wasn't parkland. It was never publicly owned.
So for everyone listening, when we say lakefront, it has to be essentially parkland or
that you can't build on. And almost all of the lakefront in this city is parkland.
Are there any other, I'm going to put you on the spot, but are there any other situations where there is stuff that's been built on the lakefront that is private that we can think of besides Lake Point Tower?
That's really it. Now when you get further south past the South Shore Cultural Center and maybe a little bit further north, I think, past Hollywood, you get these things where buildings sort of stop at the lake.
I think about Edgewater, like all those high rises that are along Sheridan Road there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've never, I hate to say, sorry to Northsiders, I've never peeked behind those buildings to see if there's any parkland behind all that. So if there is, I'm sorry.
I think I haven't either.
But the city owns from the water, from the edge of the water into infinity. There are things called riparian rights. So there's actually, you can find maps, but there's actually grids of streets under there, unbuilt streets. The city is staking its claim, saying, don't build in this water because we're going to come back for it one day. There's even a plan to kind of do that, to extend the lakeshore and the lakeshore park that was part of the Lucas Museum deal at the last minute.
Well, I think we're on to something. I think that the Bay Plan is the I know you don't like the name.
That's right.
Like the name. You have to have some humility.
That's right.
But
that's right.
I know.
Somewhere in the game.
Right. You have a huge smile on your face. But I wonder if that could be a way that we could move forward this summer. Could have you back on and we could talk about some of the issues and almost have discourse about urban planning and what we see, we include the WGN audience here, on what we could see Chicago being in the next 50 to 100 years.
Love to.
Right?
Absolutely love to. Because it's a question that has to be asked. If we don't plan it, it'll always be like this. I got an idea. This guy wants to do this. If we don't plan it, Burnham taught us that. Daley the First taught us that. Daley the Second, to a certain extent, taught us that. If we don't plan it and leave it to chance and happenstance, you'll get these kind of crazy fits and starts.
Lee Bay is an architecture contributor. He's a photographer. He's a all-around Renaissance man.
Thank you.
Where can we find your work? Where are you centrally located? Facebook now?
It seems like it's Facebook now, but also leebay.com has some of my stuff. And also, if you look up Urban Observer, it's a blog.